Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. The dream has died. Operation Grand Slam is laid to rest for another year. Scotland go down fighting against France at the weekend, but we will be back to take on those Irish. And we've got, I think it's 10 days till kickoff, and the Irish have already kicked off the war of words. This Scotland team keeps talking. And to keep on talking about Scottish rugby, it is, of course, David, Alan and Matt. Matt, how you doing, fella?
Yeah, not too bad over here. I think I've slowly but surely recovered from defeat at the weekend. And then there's been a few bits flying around on social media today in the context of the Ireland game that have got me very up for the next match post the Fallow week. So got that to look forward to, I suppose.
We do. It's nice to have a long sort of build up into Triple Crown week. The Grand Slam is dead, but long live the Triple Crown. Alan, are you hyped about the Triple Crown train?
I was pro the first Fallow week, but I don't know how happy I am about this other down week. I kind of feel like we got back into it, and it's almost now like I would have liked another match this weekend to roll straight into that Irish match would have been quite nice. But no, looking forward to it. Don't like the fact that we've lost to Ireland 7 out of 7 under Tooney.
Yes.
Don't like that stat.
It's the Fallow week has also given Ireland the chance to bring back like Henshaw, Sexton, Furlong, Gibson Park and Tadhg Byrne, which is just
a lot of really good reinforcements. Yeah.
People who don't really lose to Scotland as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a bit of a pain in the arse. And I don't know if you guys have looked at the weather, but it's meant to be snowing when we're playing Ireland. We're about to go back into a real beast of the East. I don't know who that favours more. Probably nobody. Certainly not the fans.
I think it favours Ireland.
Yeah, definitely.
To be honest.
Yeah.
And also the fact that if we're going to win the Six Nations,
we need
a bonus point win. So yeah. I struggle to see us in terrible conditions getting four tries.
Three mall tries and a scrum pushover for the bonus point.
That
would be quite good. It would be awesome if on the last day they have to do that Premier League thing where they put the Six Nations trophy in like a helicopter, just sort of like hovering across the British Isles about where it's going to go.
Somewhere over the Irish Sea.
Yeah. Like where is it going to be? Well, we will talk an awful lot about Ireland later on. But first, we'll have to look back at the events of the weekend. A little bit of news in between. Why the hell not? Just a quick reminder of where you can find us on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod. Lads, we're closing in on 14,000 followers on Twitter. I'm feeling good about that. We're going to get ourselves over the line. There's a big, big market for memes out there. And I think we can keep going.
Just need Elon Musk to like hold off purging the bots for like a little bit.
Yeah, we do have a there's a real nice like couple sow like sex bots in there, which I'm quite enjoying. And then on Instagram, thistle_rugby_pod are the two main channels where you can find our nonsense, and our newsletter is on Substack as well. So get yourself up and over there. And we hope that you're still enjoying our Fanzo League, the Pint Predictor League, enjoying it. I think my brother is now number one, got another couple of big wins under his belt. So he's absolutely drowning in free Guinness.
Number one in the league, or in the Thistle League, or number one globally?
He's certainly number one in the Thistle League. And then I think, I mean, that corresponds quite a lot with like the global. We've got a big chunk of the Fanzo player base. So he's certainly in a good spot over there.
How are you guys? I'm 346th in our league, which is pretty bad.
I'm not entirely sure I did mine last week. I mean, I'm not a particularly good spokesperson for this company. Not doing fantastically well.
Yeah, I'm not great. I'm bottom third of the Thistle League.
I'm 378.
That feels like our level.
So no, actually no, I say that my brother's actually second. Callum Robertson leading the charge on the league. So great to see. So that's on Fanzo. You can still join in. Get yourself, if you're already playing, maybe you're not in our league, join it. Thistle. Download the app. Predict the scores. Win free pints of Guinness. What is not to like? With two big rounds of the Six Nations still to come. Before we get back into Six Nations, there's been domestic news, which is always worth touching upon. Mike Blair, Edinburgh head coach, has decided not to renew his contract, or he's stepping down from head coaching Edinburgh at the end of this season. Matt, it's obviously been a difficult season for Edinburgh this year, but the general feeling was that Mike Blair was doing a good job. Were you surprised by the news when it landed?
Yeah, I was. It seemed pretty out of the blue, and there hadn't been any sort of suggestions that he was unhappy in the role, or that, you know, players had any issues, et cetera, despite what, as you say, it's been a difficult season. He's obviously come out and talked about the fact that the main reason is that he wants to be more of a coach, an attacking coach specifically, and he's found the demands of like being the head coach pretty difficult. And to my mind, I would be surprised if the SOU have moved to sort of try to replace him, because I think that since he's taken charge, Edinburgh, despite their difficulties this season, have been moving in a generally positive direction. And it seems like the fans are pretty excited about where the club is at the moment. So, yeah, pretty surprising one, to be honest.
Alan, take you back a little bit.
Yeah, I guess it's nowhere to go. There's nothing agreed in terms of sort of future position, is there?
Not, there's certainly not been announced. And the fact that he's kind of going on a lot of podcasts and like touting himself around a little bit. So I don't think he does have a gig.
Yeah, interesting. I guess it's amazing, right? Like 6 months ago, he probably would have had the shortest odds for being the next Scotland coach, right? Or so it's an amazing sort of shift in direction. And yeah, I agreed. I felt like he had, even though the season's probably not gone as well as you'd hoped, especially for people like myself that put a bit of money on Edinburgh to win the URC this year. It felt like there was It definitely felt like there was enough, signs within that team. There was enough sort of credit in the bank for Mike Blair, both in terms of kind of how they've played. And also, I think just how he comes across. I think people are always like, find him quite like an intelligent and an interesting sort of thinker of the game. So he definitely had even with a bit of the difficulties, there was definitely no signs that he was like under pressure, right? Both kind of at the SOU, but also from fans. So I think that's just why it's so surprising, especially with someone like Ben Healy coming in, who you'd imagine Mike Blair was sort of part of that.
Yeah.
Trying to get him across to Edinburgh versus Glasgow. So, but no, it's hopefully he sort of picks something up. Maybe he'll get the French attacking coach job.
Do you think he'll be lost to the Scottish game for the foreseeable? Because I can't, you know, some people are saying, well, maybe he can be the attack coach at Edinburgh, but I'd be surprised if any sort of new head coach coming in wouldn't want a bit of a clear out and to put their own staff in. And then obviously Glasgow are sorted. It kind of feels as if, as you said, Alan, before, he was maybe a favourite to replace Townsend, but now it kind of seems as if Townsend has a decent chance of having his contract extended. Slash, there's a lot of talk about
if he wants it,
maybe some Kiwi coaches, etc. I just can't really see like a place for him within the SRU.
Yeah, I suppose his reputation won't have been too diminished, really. He's done a decent job with Edinburgh, some statement wins. Perhaps it's not worked out amazingly well for him this year, but he could go off and get a knob. I don't think he'll struggle for employment, you know, as an attack coach somewhere. But it's an interesting point as to whether he will be lost in the Scottish game. I reckon probably in the short term, the answer is yes. He talks an awful lot about not enjoying doing the other stuff that comes with being a head coach. Do you think it was just like too many like business mixers at like Galbraith estate agents? And he was just like, this is just, I'm done with this, guys. I can't do it anymore. He was like, I cannot go to another like business club meeting.
He'd had too many steak dinners at Kylo. He was like, this is just it's too much.
He's like, I took the job, I thought the Kylo steak dinners were going to be unbelievable, but they're terrible. I mean, it's not something that we need to talk about in a huge amount of detail. But the other bit of news this week, Mark Bennett re-signing, off the market. Another plug for Galbraith, no free ads. He's off the market in Edinburgh, staying with them for another couple of years. Matt, just a sort of Scottish rugby stalwart now, still playing very good rugby. You know, Mark Bennett, hard to not like that bit of business.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting that, you know, maybe a year or so ago, if you look back even to the summer tour, like Bennett was sort of back in the Scotland fold. And there are a few people, probably Alan mainly, saying that Harris should be replaced by Bennett. And now
I remember it.
Hugh Jones is, you know, like, I saw he's just voted player of the round in the Six Nations last week. Like, now it feels quite far away from that. But I saw he was talking in his interview about the extension. Like, he's approaching 100 caps now for Edinburgh, after maybe like a bit of a slow start to his career with injury, etc. There. But I feel like he's been one of Edinburgh's like strongest players by far, and senior players now in the last couple of years. So it's a nice bit of business.
Yeah, absolutely. Alan, you got anything to add on Benzo?
I guess the only thing with him is it does feel like he's sort of shifted out of Scotland contention. I don't think he's had a great sort of, not terrible, but potentially not a great sort of 3 or 4 months. And he's sort of definitely, you know, if you're looking at the two Scotland teams, definitely been Hugh Jones in terms of the 13s that's really stood out in terms of performances. And I guess also the other one is, I thought potentially he would have, you know, an English or French sort of contract in him. Obviously still has scope to do it. But you always forget that he maybe had that sort of time at Clermont when he was like 18, 19, which is always one of the most sort of random kind of transfers is when Clermont just sort of like picked up. I don't know. Was he Marr originally? Cumnock?
Cumnock.
Yeah.
But I randomly watched him in an under maybe 18s game or under 20s game when Hogg was in the same team, down in the border somewhere. And he, at that age, he was Scotland's best player. Like, Hogg was absolute class, but Bennett was, at least on that day, better than him. So I don't know, maybe Clermont saw something in him, even at that age.
Well, I mean, that takes us to France, which is a nice jumping off point into the Six Nations, which is obviously what we're going to talk about for the rest of the podcast. Scotland going down and losing to France. This Grand Slam dream is over. Matt, is it safe to say that after about 50 minutes, you thought Scotland were going to do it? They were going to make the grand comeback?
Yeah, I don't know. There was a lot of rugby to be played, but it did feel like the momentum was with Scotland. And it kind of, at that stage, I did think at half time, like,
yeah.
France, when they got going for their, particularly their first try, like the absolute juggernaut through the pack, quick ball, we weren't really sort of making any dominant hits. And I kind of thought, right, they've got our number here. But then, you know, like the red card was obviously like a stupid bit of play, but it's unlucky in a sense to get a red card. And then the intercept. And I even thought the second try for France was staying like a bit of an errant boot. It's a bit unlucky. And I actually thought, like, if you take those moments of sort of poor luck out of it, Scotland were actually like doing reasonably well. So I kind of had a little bit of hope from that front. And yeah, when Scotland won that penalty, kicked it in the second half, around that sort of 60, 65 minute mark, went up back up the field just after we'd scored again as well. Yeah, there was a big part of me that was thinking, right, we're actually going to do this. Momentum's so important and it's all with us.
Yeah, that was the moment. Alan, would you say that missed line-out throw was the worst Scotland line-out since quarterfinal 2015? Or do you think that's giving it too much of a position on a pedestal?
I guess, including the context, yes, there's definitely been a lot of terrible line-outs.
There's been a lot of bad line-outs. Oh, boy.
I think after Finn scored that try, there was two moments that we had to sort of execute. Yeah. And we failed to. And one was the Blair Kinghorn having to catch that up and under. And the other one was that that line out throw. And you can sort of forgive Kinghorn because it was a good up and under and he was under quite a lot of pressure. Obviously, it is a super difficult skill. But yeah, that line out. And it was quite a simple move. And it didn't even look like it was particularly close. I don't know if there was like a miscommunication or what exactly happened. But yeah, it was painful. And, you know, to have sort of ridden out quite a lot of pressure and to have got to that point, I can just imagine also from like an emotional standpoint, that must have been a huge blow on the pitch to sort of like be to kind of get that sort of to have ridden that sort of wave of pressure to have come out of it, sort of come out with sort of 5-6 minutes to go, and then for it to be sort of immediately sort of snatched away, it was a painful moment.
It really was. I mean, speaking of painful moments, let's talk about it quickly, because I don't actually think there's much debate about it, but Grant Gilchrist obviously seeing red very early on in the game. Anything to say on the red? It was pretty much a straight shoulder to the head. Pretty textbook case.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that there's an argument that he got it was unlucky given that Matt Ferguson already whacked Jalonch and that sort of ricocheted his body up into the Gilchrist shoulder. But at the same time, as soon as you are running in full steam without much control and a tucked arm, you know, that's the rules now. There's no mitigation. So you sort of like take the law into your own hands at that point. And yeah, in this day and age, something like that can happen. And I think he got lucky with the first, in a sense, with his first challenge on Geelong, which was pretty much the same. And I wonder if someone had, you know, I get it, it's the heat of the battle. It's the right start of the game. You want to make your mark. I wonder if someone had maybe been able to see that on the big screen and there'd be a chance to get a message on and just say to him, like, you know, if we can channel that just a little bit better. But I don't want to criticise him too much. I think it's, you know, he's not that kind of player. He's been playing so well for Scotland recently. It's just, yeah, a bit of a rush of blood and quite a lot of bad luck, I think.
There was clearly, you know, a view to sort of come out and be really aggressive in defence early on, and ultimately, you know, when you're trying to be that aggressive and that abrasive, there is ultimately always do run the risk of that incident happen, because in a lot of ways, if you want to try and be more aggressive, you become less control. You have less control over your body in a lot of ways, right? So clearly, especially on that kickoff, you're sort of coming at pace and you're lining up from a little quite a way far out. And yeah, you know, ultimately Geelong, how do you pronounce it? Geelong?
Yeah, I think so.
Ultimately just dipped a little bit, and that's all it kind of took, right? But look, got more sympathy for him than you do Hoas.
Hoas. Yeah, I was going to ask how we said that.
Yeah, he's only got a 4-game ban after this.
It's just so stupid. He's like,
basically the one thing he's good at rugby is getting rogue red cards. I don't understand. No mitigation. Like, how can that? It would be interesting to see what kind of ban Gilchrist gets and how it measures up against that.
The Gilchrist, when was the Gilchrist hearing? It was meant to be on Tuesday, right?
I think it was last night.
Oh, really?
But, yeah, I haven't heard anything.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything either. And then it was the first time a player's got a red card twice against the same international team.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like all the jokes before the game. You're like, oh, well, at least Hoas is playing. Like, he'll punch Jamie Ritchie. And then he does that. It is really funny.
I have to say, it was one of the best moments of the Six Nations for me, though. Like, because at that stage, we were, what, 19-0 down?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, my God, we're going to wear 50 here, like, easily. And then when you see them going upstairs, you're like, this is unbelievable.
And then just on top of that, Hoas has got, he got a suspended prison sentence, like, last year for robbing tobacco merchants back in the day.
Yeah, I did look that up. It was when he was 19.
Was it?
Yeah. How old is he now?
I don't know, but I think older. It was like
20.
I think he's come from a pretty like bad background.
Got you.
And he's sort of like relatively sorted his life out. But
Alan, you've got a real nasty streak in you, don't you? Slagging off Mohammed Harris, driving Chris Harris out of the Scotland team.
Look. Jesus Christ. Well, I've been calling Grant Gilchrist passive for the last couple of years. Maybe this was his moment.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah.
all that pressure is built up, and he was like, this time I'm going to show the world that I am not passive, and look what happened, right?
Do you think, Alan, do you think you'd survive a Hoas haymaker or a Hoas flying headbutt? Like, I think you might die.
I would easily take the headbutt over the punch.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Ben White sort of walked it off.
Yeah, I mean,
it's interesting that he never went for any sort of like HIA or anything like that. Not to go down like the sort of the concussion thing, but you would think that a sort of head-to-head contact that results in a red card, they'd at least maybe have a look.
No, I agreed. And then went on to have a really great game. So, you know.
Again,
Ben White is just great.
Yeah, it comes across like quite a good guy as well, very likable. But no, I thought he was very, very solid and very on the mark across the whole match.
Should we do a bit of Finn? Another sort of tour de force, full of like lots of little errors and frustrating little turnovers. But ultimately, Matt, when he gets going and he gets the bit between his teeth, he's something else, isn't he?
Yeah, I think it was. It was just a bit of a shame that, like, not to focus on the errors, but like it was a bit of a shame that the error that he made in the intercept to Ramos is probably the only error he's made so far in the tournament that's led to points, and it was just a critical point in the game. But I actually think overall it was probably his best performance in the tournament so far, which, given the circumstances, like we know that he is gonna give it a crack and not retreat into a shell, but you combine like making a few mistakes and then also the context of the match, it'd be perfectly understandable for him to sort of play the percentages a little bit more, but kept trying things. It seemed as if like France were actually, whenever he got the ball, trying to mark him as much as possible, but at the same time they're pretty like terrified of him. And the break he made, where he sort of made the sort of inside dummy, I thought was just a sign of that. And it was interesting. I think when he was on the BBC podcast last week, the kind of Finn Russell special, he was talking about Townsend had been encouraging him to, at the start of each game, to sort of carry the ball to the line a little bit more, and sort of go for the half break just to get himself into the game. And I think you could definitely notice that in his performance. So he was actually probably, compared to Wales and England, a lot more taking the ball to the line and asking even more questions of the French defence. And I think that in itself just freed up the likes of Tupelo to Jones and the forwards around him to look pretty good in attack, even when we were down to 14 men. Mm. And then I think just on top of that, like a few of his, you know, his assists, etc., are just the things we know he can do. But once again, like that 50-22 in the first half, a lot of his tactical kicking, the crossfield kick from like his own line, which wasn't, you know, didn't lead to a try, but led to us being like 60 metres up the pitch. Pretty like consummate performance overall, I'd say.
Do you think that crossfield kick was a bit rogue? I appreciate it pulled it off. But
I mean, yeah, definitely. Like, if it doesn't work, it's, you know, you're a bit fucked. It was so good, though. Like, it just like switched the dynamic in that play within like 10 seconds.
It's, yeah, a moment I found kind of interesting was the bit where he almost kind of rounded DuPont, which he sort of has this, you know, he does have a bit of pace and actually quite good balance in terms of being able to sort of round him. And he clearly thought he was sort of passed. And then there's just no worse feeling than feeling that sort of tap on the foot. And then clearly that sort of, we went through sort of a period of a bit of panic kind of post that, because he obviously tried to sort of throw off the offload to Doohan. But yeah, I think, you know, ultimately there's always going to be a couple of issues when it comes to Finn. But I think, you know, broadly, his performances, I'd say across the three matches, have just sort of steadily improved. And he's definitely the standout 10 in the Six Nations this season.
The Times did a big piece on it as well, like asking, is Finn Russell the best fly half in the world? Which I think is, I don't know, a bit of a mad question at the moment. But I think in the context of the Six Nations, stats-wise, around like possession, territory in the kicking game, yeah, assists, breaks, etc., like it's not just the flash things, it's borne out in the overall stats that he is, I think, at the moment by far the standout 10 in the tournament.
I don't think this is really his fault, but I guess, why do we think we sort of struggled to get the back three involved? You know, Jones and Tupelo both were pretty strong, but that sort of French kind of blitz defense kind of coming out to him, we sort of struggled to get a lot of ball out to Doohan, Steyn and Hoggy out in those outside channels, which I think is probably more of a, you know, saying the French defense worked well rather than, you know, Scotland was poor in attack, right?
I kind of got the sense right from the start that Doohan in particular was like a really marked man, and he always is to an extent, but I suppose like Wales, like marking him that closely is completely different to France doing it, because they have the physicality to deal with him. And I, you know, he's maybe the kind of player that, unless the game is coming to him, he's not like the kind of guy that's going to make so many chances for himself. And it's kind of the same with Steyn, I think. Although he wouldn't have been as marked as Doohan, I think they'd identified him as a bit of a danger man and managed to keep the ball away from him pretty well, it seemed.
So yeah, that's kind of a look at, I suppose, Finn and the backs and our attacking stats, with a little bit of Hugh Pilotto mentioned as well. But obviously the pre-match running was all about, you know, how Scotland could live in the physical battle. We had the 6-2 bench and everything like that. Now, Gilchrist going off within the first 10 minutes was never perfect for sort of setting up that battle. But Alan, how did Scotland sort of pack front up against that sort of like French juggernaut?
Yeah, I guess firstly, actually, when Gilchrist went off, I was like, thank God we've done a 6-2.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
Because I feel like good that we'd have those sort of extra reinforcements sort of coming off the bench. And actually, you know, with the number of sort of French forwards that were going down injured, again, that sort of fed into, to your point, when we had sort of 30 minutes left, I was like, it feels like Scotland are in a great position, obviously just momentum wise, but also for the fact that we've probably got a lot more sort of fit forwards on the pitch, or forwards who have only played for sort of 10-15 minutes. I think broadly did pretty well. I think there is still a thing, and it's France, Ireland and South Africa where there's sort of this key issue. is when those three teams start doing one-out runners or running off 10 and get a little bit of momentum and get some quick ball, we really, really struggle to stop it. And, you know, that first try for France was just a very clear example of where it was a little bit too easy for them just to kind of keep popping off and just continuously get those 1 or 2 meters with quick ball. And our pack was just struggling to kind of kill that momentum or win or kind of ultimately sort of push the back and the contact. And that's always sort of my fear, especially as we sort of lean into this Irish match, is do we have the pack that can face up to just those big, hard runners off 9 and 10? And I think there was quite a lot of times where France, when they did get their act together and kind of got the ball and kind of built up some phases, they're still able to kind of make just those 1 or 2 yards every single time. That's just a little bit too easy.
Yeah, and it was interesting, like, with Hamish Watson coming back in, that he just didn't get a chance to show what he could do in terms of slowing that ball down. But it was funny. I felt like we know how good France are over the ball in defence, but I think Scotland actually did a really good job of combating that. And I think there's some stats around how many turnovers we gave away to France last year compared to this year, and it was night and day. So it's interesting that, like, and I get it, they're two different skills, but it's interesting that we were able to sort of get ahead of France when it came to when we had the ball. It was just when, as you say, when the France, like, steamroller started moving, there was nothing we could do to slow it down. Because ultimately what they're doing is really simple, but it's executed extremely well, and it was really, really effective. But I think after that bit, I think we did a pretty good job of making life difficult. There were a few line-out issues, obviously, but I think we were pretty competitive there. And aside from maybe like 1 or 2 scrums in the first half, ironically at key periods, particularly when the BAM squad of Nell, et cetera, came on, we actually had the upper hand in the scrum. So I think there are a few sort of positive signs that can be taken into a sort of similar contest against Ireland.
Why do you think we sort of struggled? I guess it feels like we've probably been a little bit sort of second best at the breakdown across actually all three of the matches, you know, even if you look at the first match against Wales. I guess why do you think we're sort of struggling to gain traction at the breakdown in defence?
Yeah, it's a good question. Because you look across the back rows that have played, and even someone like Matt Ferguson, you think, would be able to chip in with a few turnovers. And I think on top of that, like, our defence has been genuinely really good. Maybe it's something to do with the amount of, like, dominant tackles that we've been going in. I feel like at times we're kind of happy to soak up pressure. And I wouldn't say they're passive tackles going in, but we're maybe not sort of winning that initial contact. But beyond that, it's hard to say. I don't know if, you know, having Crosby in there, maybe I think he made a good impression, but he wasn't quite able to get that Jacklin game going. And it seems as if Richie's sort of been focusing on just other, like, the nuts and bolts of the game beyond that.
But just not passing.
Sorry, was that in reference to the pass to Doohan?
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, that was really, really gutting.
Yeah. And there's quite a few moments. It was annoying that, you know, probably the biggest positive from the Wales and England game was just how clinical Scotland were in the red zone. Yeah. And we just felt like we had a lot of, and ultimately we did put away some chances, but there was just a lot of times that we just struggled to convert just a lot of possession, especially in that sort of that kind of first 25 minutes of the second half. You know, we probably could have chalked up points a little quicker. Mm. And we sort of struggled with a bit. And, you know, that Richie to Doohan pass, the Xander sort of, yeah, like, drop. It was a scrum where it kind of felt like Finn kind of went down the short side. It probably felt like the wrong decision. Just a lot of moments like that where we weren't quite choosing or executing well enough.
There was also, I think it was just after the Hawass red card, that we went to the corner and we lost the line out. Yeah. And then later on in the game, when we'd managed to fight back, and I think we were maybe 8 or 9 points down, line out on the French 22, and we went for like a kind of complicated... But to be fair to Scotland, the lineup moves you've done so far in this tournament, they've gone over the top, have been executed really well, but Richie tried to bat it back to Doohan, he dropped it. And then another point, I think we managed to recover from that, had a promising attack. And 2 below 2 sort of gave this pass to Jones that probably wasn't on. Which, yeah, those are like 5 or 6 chances that were pretty critical on the day, arguably.
Yeah, it was pretty gutting. As you say, left an awful lot out onto the field. Do you want to talk, do you look forward to Ireland a little bit? I know we're still 10 days out, but there's still a little bit of chatter we can do on that. Well, let's have a look at Ireland then. I mean, obviously you touched upon it there, Alan, when you were talking about the challenge faced by the French pack and the physicality. Ireland, if anything, looking sort of more dominant in that area, particularly knowing we're going to have to replace Gilchrist. What do you reckon? Let's actually start there. Gilchrist is the one sort of nailed on change that we're definitely going to have to make. Scott Cummings come in for you? He's playing for Glasgow this weekend, or would you flip in a Sam Skinner? What's your move?
I thought Johnny Gray looked pretty great off the bench.
Yeah.
So
I think the Gray brothers.
Yeah, going back, Gray brothers in the row. It's I thought he had a pretty strong performance actually when he came off, and ultimately, unless Scott Cummings kind of blows Zebra off the park, it feels like Johnny Gray's probably got that sort of sewn up.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they go for another 6-2 split, so you then just bring Cummings sort of off the bench and have, I mean, I quite like the idea of Cummings, Skinner and Dempsey all sort of coming on with about 25 minutes to go.
Matt, you buying that off the shelf?
Yeah, I think so. It feels as if we've actually been pretty lucky with injuries and suspensions this tournament, because normally at about this stage, like, we've got 1 or 2 injuries and we're having to call up like someone from Stade Niçois or something, or like Old Glory. So like, to have, I don't know, to even with Gilchrist out, like the names you just mentioned, you'd be pretty happy with all of them coming in, I think.
So, starting really, yeah.
Someone
did cherry play at Stade Niçois, or am I making that up?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did.
Fair play to him.
Fair play to Dave. Cheers. Yeah. Down there.
The real question is, where does Haining come into in the back row?
That's true, actually. Yeah. Who are we dropping for Nick Haining?
Maybe Haining does a shift in the row. They're just like, come on, lads. Like, we know you can pull this out of the fire. You can do it. I saw someone tweeted today, or maybe it was yesterday, saying that the last time we beat Ireland was in 2018 and Richie Gray was playing. So, read into that what you will.
That was the year we beat Ireland and Wales at Murrayfield?
Yeah.
Great times.
Do you think if Darge gets through 60-70 versus Zebra, you bring him in the back row, try and disrupt Ireland at the breakdown?
Yeah,
in place of Watson. So a straight swap for Watson.
Yeah. Watson gets like 12 minutes in the tournament.
I can't see that happening.
Me neither.
Yeah, I don't know. I just can't get that France game at home out of my mind. And I just, again, I fear that if we don't manage to slow down and kind of get at the Irish ruck, there's just going to be moments where we're just getting battered and battered, and we're not going to be able to kind of deal with it. And, you know, ultimately it's not the be all and end all, but I just wonder whether having someone like Darge is just like a great weapon to have against that Ireland pack.
It's a big step up.
It'd be ballsy. The Toombola has not really been ruled out. I suppose Hugh Jones was a bit of a punchy selection. But I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Like, you have one game against Zebre. It's hard to really assess, like, how well he's playing. But then at the same time, it feels as if Watson's form that recently hasn't been that great either. So maybe you're not actually making that big of a gamble by swapping them out.
Yeah, I mean, I think the gamble is more like a fitness thing, really. I think quality-wise, I think Darge has shown enough over the last sort of year or so that he's at as good a level as Watson is, like, right now, right?
Yeah.
And I just wonder if, yeah, you know, I wonder if the risk is low enough to sort of put him in, just given the qualities that he does possess, right?
I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I'm ready for it.
I'd like to see it. And then I think...
Any other changes that you'd be looking for?
I mean, you could drop Richie. I'm just throwing out there. Well, it feels like Ferguson in the back three is now the only one, is like the most nailed on from like a performance standpoint, right?
That's true.
I do.
Richie's
get a sense
having a decent tournament though. Like, I think you're looking to make a change there though. It's not one that you're thinking that needs to happen, right? Or is this just being contrarian again, Alan?
I also think his captaincy has been. It's hard to tell exactly from the outside, but I think it's been pretty good. And I actually think having him as captain rather than some of like the nominally bigger players in the team seems so far to be working reasonably well. So I don't know if they want to disrupt that.
No, I agreed. I am happy with him, but I you know, there has been a bit of, I have spoken to a few people who, there is the question mark around, would Richie's place be questioned if he wasn't captain, which I think is a fair shout.
Yeah.
And anything that's in the back line? Yeah. Probably nothing. Ben White is sick.
Can't see it.
Ben White is so good.
Darcy isn't back yet.
No. He's not gonna be. Don't think he's gonna be.
Yeah.
Finn, Hugh Pilotti. Doohan, Hoggy.
Not a lot of room.
Yeah.
Not a lot of room there.
I was thinking about the other day, like a year ago, if you'd said to us that Scotland are going to be going into the Six Nations, but you're not going to be able to start Price, Redpath, Harris, or Darcy Graham, you'd be like, It's getting a bit rough.
I mean, a year ago, Tua Pilotti was still
Sutherland,
like,
as well.
Tua Pilotti was still not really catching fire at Glasgow a year ago.
No, not at all. No.
I remember when we leaked this Scotland team. Was it South Africa before the autumn last year? And the SRU rang us up to tell us off. That was because Tua Pilotti was playing at 12, and no one could believe it.
Was that his first cap?
Might have been.
Yeah, I think it was, actually.
I think he then subsequently got injured. And did Matt Scott play that game? Was that the game Matt Scott played?
No, I think that's a good shot. Because I actually think I think that is correct. But look,
Great.
He really is great. And yeah, he's... just sort of continue just a sort of extremely sort of consistent run of form.
Yeah.
And yeah, just has that sort of blend of, I mean, ultimately he would be horrible to tackle, but can do all sort of the finer things right as well.
Yeah.
Ahead of this game, is there a team that you would like, is this the team you would most like to beat at the moment, Ireland?
Yeah.
Some of the stuff recently, the thing on Twitter today, I was like, I hate Ireland. I want to beat them. I got to that point. I was like, I've had enough of this. Fair enough. Their record against us is, you know, you can't say anything about it.
Unimpeachable. But,
exactly. But
is it you just inevitably come to hate people who win a lot? Or is there something specific about Ireland?
We've never beaten New Zealand, and I'm like, yeah, cool. Those guys, like, play quite class rugby and just get on with it. Like, they don't, I don't know. It's,
I think the New Zealand thing is like, you know, that Don Draper meme, and he's just like, he's like, I don't think about you at all. Like, I don't think, like, New Zealand are just like, we don't need to say anything about Scotland because, like, we don't
well,
care.
Yeah, yeah.
I think what goads me about Ireland is that it's just like, that could have been us, man. If we'd, like, just sort of done professionalism slightly differently over, like, the last 20 years, like, they're sort of comparable size and all that sort of stuff.
But yeah, yeah. Growing up, when we were, like, you know, first getting into to Scottish rugby,
yeah.
Like, being Ireland was fairly commonplace, right? Before, like, O'Driscoll came along.
For sure, yeah. And then as the paths have just, like, diverged, like, so much over, like, the last 15 years.
And I think it's just that feeling, you know, we talk about quite a lot, is it just feels like those Irish players just don't quite respect Scotland. And that includes both the national team and Edinburgh Glasgow. Like, just they know how to beat Scotland, and they find it broadly quite easy to beat Scotland. There is a playbook that they can roll out, and we'll sort of stay in the fight for like 40, 50 minutes. But they always manage to sort of land the knockout blow.
Yeah.
And even people like Rob Kearney, right, and whatnot, have even like said that in the press, right? It's like they just know how to beat Scotland. So yeah, it's it would be great. I think, I appreciate in the moment probably Ireland. I still think I would choose New Zealand, because it'd be good to just get that first win. There was one team we could beat just once.
There's basically like nobody we haven't beaten, right?
Yeah,
we will have beaten them. We've completed the set, which would be nice. What do you reckon? I mean, I've got it up in front of me.
If we beat them, triple crown. That would just be...
I fucking love a triple crown.
Ugh.
Open top bus tour for a triple crown? What's the ruling?
No.
I reckon Edinburgh City Council, they'll clear Prince's Street for a triple crown.
How much of a laughing stock would we be in the UK if we had an open... But like, that's like when people have like bus tours for like the Carabao Cup. It's like, guys, just put it away. Just put up a couple of Instagram posts. We move on. I think win Six Nations, even if it's not a Grand Slam, that gets an open bus.
Do we get an open bus?
No.
Yeah.
What do you reckon the bookies are saying? I've got it open in front of me. How many favourites or not favourites do you think Ireland are?
Plus 9 points.
Yeah, as I said, plus 8.
It's 7. It's a little bit tighter. The one score. I think, what is that? They've beaten us 7 times and they've never lost to us by more than like one score. Sorry. They've never beaten us by less than more than one score.
Less than more than one score.
Yeah, I've not done well with that. Basically, every time they've beaten us by more than 7 points.
Yeah.
Like, it's not been close, I think, is the point that I'm trying to get to. In a roundabout way.
I think it's relatively fair. And I think, that the weather situation, I think, is a worry.
Because... I think I've got it wrong. So it's due to snow in Edinburgh next Saturday. Now, obviously, this is like, we're 10 days out. So it's pretty difficult to really judge it. But it's saying snow next Saturday and then bright and cold next Sunday. But you only need like a little bit of variance there. That could be a wintry day.
But at home on a Sunday afternoon, sort of putting sort of any sort of bonus points or like the league table to the side, I think Scotland have got a pretty good chance, you know?
Yeah.
It's again, we always sort of say this, you know, as long as we don't fall behind, this is one thing we said about the France game, like if we fall behind and we're sort of chasing our tail, and to be fair, we did a very good job of getting back in the mix. But even more so for Ireland, like if we end up like more than a score behind and we're having to chase it even more than play even more than Finn would naturally want to, that's where I just think we're going to start to get into a lot of trouble. I think it's definitely one of those games where it's like, let's just take any points that are on offer. Let's just build up a score where we can. But no, I think if that pack can see a lot, if that pack can get parity, then I think backline matchups, I think arguably just a tad stronger than Ireland.
Mac Hansen picking up a man of the match last week after we bagged him as well.
I know. I see.
He lifted. We've got a lot of power out there.
He's definitely, as you said the other day, he's definitely scoring against us.
100%.
Yeah, I agree, Alan. I think that if we're going to do it, like, this is as good a chance as we've got, as we've had for a while, that we're playing well, I think, with a little bit more luck and probably a little bit better execution, we could have been closer to France if not beaten them. I think that although Ireland will, you know, they'll be confident of beating us, I'm sure, because their system is just so good, and they'll be confident of just like bashing out their like attacks and their plays, etc. But I think they will be a little bit apprehensive about what Finn in particular can do. Because I think he's shown that even if his pack is not getting supremacy, he's going to cause any defence issues.
Yeah.
Let's get Doohan running like straight at Sexton and at Mac Hansen.
Yeah.
And maybe like Peter O'Mahony, that would make me really happy.
One last thought experiment before we call it a day on the pod. Has anything that we've seen so far in the Six Nations changed your opinion that Scotland have got no chance of getting out their group at the World Cup?
Really good question.
Yeah.
I think it makes me feel marginally... I think in terms of chances of beating South Africa, I feel have marginally improved in my eyes, and I still think that's the match that if we're going to get through, that we can win. So I'd say marginally better.
Okay.
Yeah, agreed.
Still don't think we get through.
I'll take that.
I think that back. I think mainly just because that 10, 12, 13. I just love the look of it. It seems to be working really well together. I think it's got like a really nice balance. Which I don't think we quite had looking back at that autumn.
Just incredible to look back at the autumn and think that Tooney didn't pick Finn in the squad. Like, what the fuck was going on?
But look how good he is now. Like, he is, Townsend is vindicated entirely in his selection choice.
That's certainly one way to spin it.
That's how Dawson's been here.
Incredible start.
One other question then for us. Have we missed out on the best chance of Scotland winning a Grand Slam? Looking both kind of backwards and forwards, you know, I don't know whether we're going to get a better chance.
I was thinking that at the weekend, particularly in the context of what are we going to do when Finn's gone. Like, I think you could be.
I think the profile of next year's Six Nations is a better Grand Slam road to Mordor, Alan. So away to Wales. Wales are still going to be shit by next February, right?
Yeah.
Then at home to France, we need to knock them over, obviously. But at home, that's all right. And then we've got England coming at the next round as well. So that's a back-to-back homes against France and England. Then Italy away, lovely. It's a tough finish, actually, to go to Dublin to get the Grand Slam.
Just, yeah.
The Black Gate, the Battle of the Black Gate was never going to be easy. And that's where we've got to go to. That's what we've got to do in Dublin.
It's true. Winning the Grand Slam in Dublin.
Oh, my God.
Would be great.
You just look at, and I know it's obviously that's the nature of the Six Nations. The fixtures never change, but winning all five of those games at any given time is really fucking difficult.
No, it's...
Like, imagine anyone winning a Grand Slam. Like, every single one of them, apart from Italy, obviously, but they're getting good now. Like, that's so hard to do.
But then remember, like, Wales have won, like, four in 20 years.
Yeah, recently.
is so painful.
It's Schadenfreude. I'm quite enjoying their little like meltdown now. I'm like, you guys deserve this. This is what you. This is like penance for like 20 years of success, right?
Yeah.
Well, you've got a feel for those guys that are on quarter of a million quid at the moment, being like, sorry guys, best I can offer you is 30 grand for next year.
I actually think it's got to a point now where I'm like, it is still
objectively funny.
It's objectively funny, but it's also like, oh, it's gone way too far now.
We all still want them to lose to Italy though next week.
Oh yes. I saw a thing today that I don't think it's going to happen, but if they lose by more than 16 points to Italy, then they go below Georgia in the world rankings. How good would that be?
That's amazing.
Yeah, they'd be like 13th or something like that. Maybe not 13th, but it is low.
Something like that.
They're 10th at the moment, aren't they?
Something like that.
I think it was Rugby Pass, and I think they delivered that news in the form of a meme as well. So I was like, I'm in.
Must be true.
And then the other piece of news is World Rugby have said that they're going to do the draw for the Rugby World Cup closer to the 2027 one than they did for the 2023 one.
That's because Wales are going to be like 13th in the world and like basically have like an absolute cakewalk to the quarterfinals.
It's like
four of the top five teams in the world. Now, granted, we are one of those at the moment, are all on like the same side of the draw.
Yeah,
it's just like stupid.
I just can't believe we've got to try and get out of a group with Ireland and South Africa, and the prize is the match against France and New Zealand. It's just fucking horrific.
Oh dear. Well, there's plenty of that we can talk about in the months, weeks and months to come on that. But we will be back next week, very specifically to preview Scotland versus Ireland, the Triple Crown decider, the Open Top Bus Tour decider. We're very excited about it. So we'll be back next week to do that. Thanks very much for joining us. Thanks for sticking with us. We know we are an unreliable set of boyfriends that gaslight you into thinking that you're getting podcasts and then sort of disappear for a wee bit. We promise we do try as hard as we can. So please do stick with us on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod, on Instagram Thistle_Rugby_Pod, and sign up for those elusive newsletters on Substack, Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast, and we will chat to you very soon. Thanks a lot. There we go.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.